Up next on the program, one of our absolute favorite guests on the show. Good to welcome him back. David Roth of Vice Sports joining us this afternoon. David, how are you today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thanks. Thanks for going a little bit later than originally planned with that Red Sox game. We had to squeeze in a big Mookie Betts hit before you.
I was going to say, I can't take precedence over bullpen management issues. I'll just get in whenever they're done winning.
Don't even bring up Craig Kimbrell. I don't want to talk about it. But I do want to talk about a New England coach and the blasphemous charge that you put out there recently that Bill Belichick might be boring. What are you saying, David?
I wanted to be clear about this because, you know, I have in-laws that are listening in this very region of the state of Maine where you are right now, and I know that they don't like it when I say bad things about their friend Bill. I in no way wanted to take away from his brilliance, but I recently was watching an interview with him, and it's amazing. I think he really is exactly as limited as he sort of appears to be, that he's just like the interests that he has are winning football games in a very particular way and sort of pushing himself to higher levels of excellence, all of which are laudable, but it is like, that might be it. Like there might not be hobbies, it bummed me out at first. And then I just sort of realized that, you know, he's a grown up, the choice that he's made. I just don't know that I'd want to live that way necessarily.
Well, now he does get away from it a little bit. He heads out to Nantucket and goes to Bon Jovi concerts whenever he can, if that helps.
Yeah, does it? It's something for sure. I mean, I don't want to take too much away from it. And Bon Jovi, obviously, as a fellow New Jersey native, I'm actually prohibited by law from saying anything bad about it.
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting. And there he was yesterday with a diminished group of Patriots at the White House to see his dear friend, President Trump.
Yeah, that really was interesting. And then there was this sort of the photo of it, and then the Patriots tweeted a sort of a correction on the facts about how there was actually, it was the angle and whatever. It's just, I feel more than anything else with this stuff, even beyond the policy stuff, as horrifying as it can be sometimes, I just get so tired with all of that. You know, like I just think about all this constantly bickering over the smallest possible things in the pettiest possible ways, and it just makes me want to go to bed.
No, I hear you completely on that. Well, let's talk about something more cheerful then. And man, oh man, I loved reading this today. Your story about what might be the greatest baseball card ever and how appropriate for today, the card known as the Bong Puffer card. Please tell us more.
Yeah, this is it's certainly the dumbest card ever made. I say that with as much affection as I could possibly say it. It's a card from the 2003 Topps baseball set. The Future Stars card, which are cards that would pair two players. Usually they were always in the same farm system, and they were usually people that maybe could become stars. And in this case, they took two players that were not from the same farm system, one of which was like a 21-year-old long reliever, who's Jung Bong, and the other of which was a 26-year-old like low-leverage bullpen guy that had already been cut by five teams named Brandon Puffer. When you put them on the same card, because you're a baseball editor who's 27 years old and has like the sense of humor of a 27-year-old, then you wind up with the Bong Puffer card, which it's a real thing that exists. It's out there. I have held it in my hands.
Well, and I love the story that he told about slipping it. I'm not trying to deceive anybody at Topps, but doing his best to get it through, and the order that the players were placed on there perhaps made it possible.
Yeah, this was the bit of it that it was a wonderful interview. The guy's name, the editor that was responsible for it, is named Wayne Walker. He lives in Colorado, and he was one of the funnest people to interview that I've interviewed in some time. But he had already moved off to Europe with his wife to teach English by the time the card was made. And I remember him, he was saying that he was frustrated that it's actually Puffer on the left and Bong on the right, so that you would read it as Puffer Bong. And some other people I talked to there, which is, you know, obviously still obvious enough that you're not gonna miss the joke. It's impossible. But the people that were responsible for landing the set after he left, he basically set it, put the photos together, put the card on the checklist, and then the actual production and the last few steps that were delegated to other editors. And they were the ones that flipped it just because they wanted to make sure that it got by QA. that was their nod towards being subtle with the whole thing. A very faint nod, almost imperceptible.
I love it. You also talked about a couple of other pretty infamous cards, the classic Billy Ripken, and I didn't realize that there was more than one edit to that card.
Yeah, I actually didn't either, and I collected baseball cards pretty heavily then, and I worked at Topps for a couple of years. I wrote baseball cards for 2 years. It's a thing that I don't collect, you know, very much anymore, but I do care about it. I had no idea that there were so many. There were 20 different versions, at least, that Fleer made trying to correct the Bill Ripken card with the infamous profanity on the knob of his bat. And they were all, every single one of them made the situation worse, which is amazing. And like, cause how would that be possible to do 20 times? Like, you really have to trust professionals on that. And they're all so weird. It's white out and airbrushing and like weird text blocks. Each of them different, all of them in fairly limited numbers.
And I didn't know the story about the Claude Raymond card from the 60s.
Yeah, that is a true hero and role model for the youth. Otherwise, you're a clever quality pitcher who posed for cards in 2 straight years with his fly down. that was one of the first things when I started at Topps that I asked the people that were my managers. I wanted to know how these things were possible. Not the Claude Raymond card, but there are any of these weird mistakes. I mean, the Bill Ripken one is the most egregious because it's a curse word written right there on the front of the card. Like, you can't miss it. It's in like the same type as the word Bill. You know? But the idea of like, how does that happen? And there is this element in which like sometimes like some of these things are allowed to go because they generate buzz. And then sometimes it's just like four guys with a hangover put in charge of like putting out a 700 card set. And it's really, at some point, as with any of this stuff, it's really hard to tell where the goofiness shades into intent, or whether it's just so profound that it conquers everything else.
This wasn't a situation either where the fly was obviously down only because the tab was slightly sticking out. This thing is like gaping open. You could,
it's yawning at you. It's hideous. Like, it's the sort of thing that would get you, like, you could get in trouble if you got onto a bus looking like that. And you got on 2 straight Topps baseball cards. It seemed like incredible.
We're talking with David Roth of Vice Sports. Have you been enjoying the NBA playoffs in the early going here?
I have. I mean, obviously, I'm a soft touch for this sort of thing, but it is fun to watch the meaningful basketball for sure. I also enjoy the end part of the season where it's all these D-League guys getting to play 30 minutes a game and, like, get all their shots off, but it's also cool watching this all work. I also enjoy the part of the playoffs where the weird teams are still hanging around. You know, like, sooner or later, we're not going to get to watch the Bucks anymore, and the playoffs will be a little bit more boring for that.
Well, and it may be boring for New England fans the way the Celtics have started, and obviously, man, it's been a tough situation, and it's almost as if, talking to some of the Boston guys, the team is having a tougher time on the court dealing with the death of Isaiah Thomas's sister than he has.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I can't imagine. I mean, in the sense that this has been a thing that I had to, something similar for me this year, not in my family, but grief is very complicated, but it is also the sort of thing where having a discrete task to accomplish is a thing that can be useful, you know, I mean, because it just takes you out of having to sort of try to manage or contemplate something that is so fundamentally unmanageable and unthinkable. But so that's Isaiah, that's for Isaiah Thomas, but then for the rest of these guys that are so close to him, it's a lot heavier a thing to contemplate than you usually get with stuff like that. You know, and you can't say their head's not in the game or what, you know, any of the sports cliche stuff. It makes sense. There are bigger things than this, and they're kind of inescapably hanging over all of it right now.
You had a wonderful piece. I laughed out loud reading about Big Red, the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers mascot, who is desperately in need of some new threads.
Oh, I love this story, and I love that mascot very much. He showed up, and it's like you wouldn't think that you know what the Western Kentucky University mascot looks like, but he's been, like, you probably do. He's been in SportsCenter commercials. He looks like a gumdrop, that like really cares about Conference USA sports for whatever reason. I didn't realize that, I guess this is the case for a lot of these mascots, but Big Red sees a lot of action. Like, he's out in the community 200 odd days a year. That's like not even including games, going to things. I sort of lost about half an hour of work earlier this week just watching videos of Big Red making surprise appearances at weddings across the Kentucky area. And he brings the house down. And it's like the bride and groom are out there, and then this big gumdrop comes in and starts doing some silly dance with its belly, and everybody in the place is cheering. Anyway, apparently it's very strenuous, so every year you have to replace the suit, and the Western Kentucky is currently crowdsourcing that effort, and it's going pretty well. I haven't donated any money yet, but if it comes down to it, I think I can probably find over $10 to spare. It's a good cause.
Maybe it's the date on the calendar, but when I look at him, I see just a little bit of H.R. Puffin stuff going on. Am I the only one?
Not at all. In the same way that it's both adorable and then also kind of makes you feel like you shouldn't be operating heavy machinery. Like, it's a little on the psychedelic side of the spectrum, for sure.
Well, it's a great piece. As always, David Roth of Vice Sports. Before we let you go, and the last time around, we talked about some of the people of interest in this brave new world of the Trump administration. Who's the leader in the clubhouse for you right now of strangest or at least most comedic character to watch?
It's hard. It's all very dark. But my guy right now, of course, I do have an answer ready off the top of my head, which is a little embarrassing, is Sebastian Gorka.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because he really seems like a villain in a Batman, like a lesser Batman series comic book sort of thing. With the crazy goatee, and he's always like making dire pronouncements and wearing weird medieval medals at times when you don't need to be wearing weird medieval medals. I respect his commitment to keeping it weird, and I hope never to hear of him again.
I think he was played by Hans Conried in the original version.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He has that kind of like weird Bond villain affect, with accents like so too plummy by half. Kind of just looks like some evil count. You don't get enough of those guys anymore.
No.
Most of the time, when you're dealing with White House villains, they're all wearing the same suit.
Yeah, it's good to see him commit to the character. We appreciate
right.
that.
At least he's got the Mandarin collar and like a bunch of obscure medals on his coat.
David Roth, Vice Sports. Always love talking with you. Thanks so much, David. We'll do it again before too long.
Sam, thanks for having me. Have a good